Islamic Relief USA is a nonprofit organization that provides relief and development in a dignified manner regardless of gender, race, or religion, and works to empower individuals in their communities and give them a voice in the world.
You done now? Can we start the podcast?
Okay.
Alhamdulillah wa salatu wa salamu ala rasulillah wa ala alihi wa sahbihi wa man wala.
It's a Water Relief podcast.
My name is Carl, and here with me...
Or Mortimon. One of those two is correct.
I have messed this up yet again.
Assalamu alaikum. Welcome. Thank you for joining us.
With all that as well.
So why don't you do a brief introduction of who you are?
Well, my name is Nasser Haji Hamad. I'm the CEO of Islamic Relief Worldwide. I have been with the organization for 23 years.
Masha Allah.
And what have you, what is exactly, just, we're all connected here in the U.S., what exactly is that you are doing worldwide?
Right, okay, obviously we are a relief and development organization, so we respond to natural and man-made disasters, that is our USP, unique selling point, if you want to call it, or our strength. We are known to fly out and be one of the first people to respond to any emergency around the world. And we also do development programs, so we don't leave people behind after the emergency, but we work through the recovery programs, we build schools, hospitals, we dig wells, and any other thing that people need, you know, after the emergency is over.
Excellent, excellent. So we have a lot of course, our listeners know about the disasters that happened here in the U.S. They know about the floods and the fires and everything like that, What are some of the locales that you've actually gone to, or is there some places closer to home that you've gone into?
Well, I think our recent response is to Pakistan, Kashmir firing that happened recently. We also responded to Myanmar, obviously, because there is unrest there. There's a bit of fighting and killing. We've done work Somalia, Mosul. We're still working in the recent fighting of trying to free Mosul. So we have, wherever there is trouble, most probably we are there. The only one I think we are on our way is Nigeria, northeast Nigeria, Lake Chad. About 4.5 million people are facing famine there. Our team is getting ready to get there in the next week or so, and we'll be establishing our mission there.
And what has the response been from the people that you've been helping?
It's very good. I mean, it's marvelous. People appreciate whatever you give them. You have to understand, when you're responding to emergency and disaster, people have almost nothing. So whatever you give them, they are highly appreciative. I mean, sometimes you really feel sorry comparing to what we have here. And when we complain, we've got this missing and that missing. These people, anything you give them, they are happy with it.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic.
I know from my perspective here working with IRUSA that Northern Mosul is it's a current issue, and it's something that we declared an emergency and we're trying to respond there. Can you give us just a little bit of insight as to what it is that Islamic Relief as a family is going to do there?
Right. Okay. Yeah. What we do, obviously, is that the first response usually is that you work with clusters, you work with other organizations, and usually UNHCR would organize the shelter programs. And then as part of that, either we manage camps and we also are engaged in food distribution. So they will be registered as IDPs, as they call them, internally displaced people. They will have their own ID through the NHCR system, and then we distribute all the food and water to those in need. And that normally is happened like on a weekly basis, you supply.
How dangerous is it for you to go into these areas as well?
Well, typically, I mean, most of the areas that we work are very dangerous, and but we already, obviously, we have our own security system, and we also obviously work with the UN security system. Mosul is not bad because we are not working inside Mosul. People are coming out from the Mosul. I mean, there's a camp called Al Hajj Ali, but got a limited humanitarian capacity and other things. So what we do is we work in these camps. So the danger is a bit less. But if you look at when we were in Mandera in Kenya, we had two of our staff were killed just a couple of months ago. that is a dangerous place.
Well,
for Mosul, we are putting a proposal together for £500,000 as well for focusing on food and non-food item distribution.
Now,
and I think we have had a good response from our partners, IR USA, IR Germany, IR Canada, and so on. So that is being implemented now.
Now, you talked about how you mentioned that people are very happy and they're very glad that you're able to come and help. Do you actually have a personal story of somebody that you've seen that you've helped?
I'm sorry, not recently. I've been busy and have been meant to go to Mosul and other parts, but I haven't. But I think my recent one has been about maybe 12 weeks ago when I was in Nepal. After the disaster, we gave them temporary shelters, and we are waiting, obviously, for permission from the government to build permanent shelters. If you look at these temporary shelters, it's amazing. They are almost nothing. You've got a tent and a bit of metal sheeting on the top, the floor, no carpet, no ceramic, nothing. And I saw an old lady around maybe 65, 70 years old. We asked her, what else do you need? And she said, we've got everything we need. And that was shocking to me because there was nothing there other than the bed, bare floor, and obviously a bit of wall and a bit of a tent, and you take a plastic sheeting. And she was happy when she had it because she had handouts of rice that people gave her. She had, maybe it would last her a couple of months. I couldn't see anything else in her room. And yet she said, I've got everything I need.
So what is it exactly that you think that they need the most, that people need, or what does your organization need the most to be able to help people in need?
Well, usually, as soon as the disaster hits, you know, we give temporary shelter. People need shelter. They need to a place to stay during the day or night. And then after that, we follow it up with food and non-food distribution. We don't normally specialize in medical aid and other things, but we do have distribution of medical aid that we give to clinics and hospitals. So we don't directly manage those projects. The next stage is usually, governments and other things giving permission is to build a permanent shelter, and then obviously rebuild the schools and the hospitals in the area so that they can go back to normal life. That is the stages that we take, and they can take a lot longer than you imagine. Nepal has been in that situation for a year and a half. There are areas that we have not been able to start the projects to rebuild the houses because the government itself, this is new for them. They're putting new policies together. They were getting funding. So there have been a lot of delays.
Now, these houses that you're, these permanent residencies that you're preparing to put up in Nepal, these are all in response to the earthquake that happened a year ago?
A year and a half ago, yeah.
A year and a half ago, yeah. And right. So it wasn't like the IR families, because I remember when that happened, our creative director, Ridwan, he actually left and went, and he was on the field, boots on the ground, as we say. And I guess that was a year and a half ago. And I remember that he would tell stories about things just getting set up and things just getting rolling. So IR didn't leave. IR is still there, and IR is trying to put up permanent residencies now because there was so much lost in the earthquake that happened.
Correct. I mean, we don't normally leave after the initial response. We stay behind. We continue to help those people. Yes, a year and a half passed. IRUSA and other partners of Islamic Relief Family have funded lots and lots of projects. You can imagine you can pour in billions of dollars after the initial disaster, and it won't be enough because people don't have food, don't have clothing, don't have temporary shelter. So we've done all that. But then people have gone back to their normal life, going to the farming and other things and some temporary schools. But their permanent shelter is restricted by the government policies. So that's what we are waiting. In some areas, we have started building those shelters. In other areas, we are waiting. We have enough funding to continue doing our work where we are located initially. And what we have done is that when we moved into Nepal last time, we went in on a temporary mission. So we didn't have to have a formal registration by the government. But because we are staying longer, we recently applied for a formal registration. And hopefully our registration will come through so we can do a longer term project as well.
How hard is it to get the government to, you know, to become involved or to respond favorably for you?
Very hard. When I met the officials, they are keen to help. But one of the officials told me, look, this is something new to us. So we are finding our way out how to do things. So the internal sort of bureaucracies in the government and systems are just, they are unable to cope with the size of the disaster and what is being asked for them, from them. So you realize, I mean, if Nepal has an earthquake every 83 years or so. So this is the first time for this generation that has happened for this government. They had no experience, they had no preparation, they had nothing. So everything is being set up from scratch. So the government is struggling. They're willing to help. They are engaging with the people. They are engaging with us, but they want to make sure that things are done properly, which means it takes a long time.
So I guess that just requires a lot of patience on your part.
Yes, yes, just patient, just continuing asking, you know, for update and other things, and to see when you are allowed sort of to work in those areas.
I know that in speaking that IR doesn't just leave, that we do stay in the areas. It was just recently, if I'm not mistaken, it's just recently in the past couple of months that we actually, that IR actually was getting ready to, or did we actually left Haiti. Is that correct? The IR has been working there all this time too.
Oh, Haiti. I think, yes, we left maybe a couple of years ago. Though we did stay after the earthquake. I mean, there was a recent one, but the first one. We stayed for a long time. We built several schools. I mean, besides the shelter that we built, obviously the initial response was the shelter residency for people. But after that, we built several schools and other things, and then we left. Normally, we don't like to leave unless we have to. Under these circumstances, sometimes your funding is dried out. You know, people don't give you to the same projects all the time. So you end up, after establishing the schools, the hospitals, you leave it. Some other NGOs, they might have other funding, so they continue.
And when a hospital runs out of money, that doesn't mean that the patients stop. It doesn't mean that the people don't keep coming there. There's still always that need.
Yes. Yes, that is one of the biggest challenges. It takes a long time for the recovery period for the local people to go to normal life. But the funding you get does not last you 5 or 10 years, or you don't get that continuous funding for the cause. People respond to what they see on TV, on the media. And once that is over, you don't get that response anymore. But whatever you get initially, it lasts you for a few years, and you try to be very creative in terms of fundraising from others, but eventually the funding dries out.
And that is a current problem that we're seeing in places like, I mean, in the last week or so, it's been in the headlines, but we're preparing for our sixth year of turmoil in Syria, or fifth year, sixth year.
Preparing for the sixth.
Sixth year, yep. Yeah. And for the last 5 years or so, unless it was something major, and I mean, we all know what those events were, it wasn't in the headlines. People weren't donating. And it's an excellent point that you bring up, that if it's not in the headlines, we tend to forget that this is going on. These are real people, and we can't just stop and ignore and forget. Because while it may not be in our face and on our TVs, it's still happening, and there are still people in need.
Yeah, that is one of the major problems we have. I think we have about 5 or 6 major issues that we are, but they do not have full coverage in the media. Syria is one of them. Lake Chad, northeast Nigeria, is another one. Yemen is the third one. Mosul is partially being covered. South Sudan, we have a problem. So we've got about 5 countries now that all need desperately a lot of help, a lot of aid, but they are not in, they do not have the headlines that you mentioned and the media. So we struggle to fundraise. We recently fundraised for Yemen. The response was not very good. South Sudan was not very good. So we have problem actually in trying to engage the public because the media is not behind us.
We're speechless here.
See, this is where we stare at each other and go, okay. No.
Is there anything that you would like our listeners to know? Is there anything that they can do to help?
I think I would say continue supporting Islamic Relief. Tune into our websites, to our Facebooks and to our Twitter. See what we are doing. And please engage with us regularly and support us. The fact that there is nothing major on the media, it doesn't mean people are not suffering. It does not mean people don't need help. As I mentioned, the 5 countries at least, five countries that I mentioned, Iraq, Syria, Yemen, South Sudan, Nigeria, they all need help. Okay? So please continue your support, continue making dua for us, and please volunteer our offices in USA and other places. They need your support, not only money, but we need your time, we need your skills, we need your experience. So get engaged in all events that you can and continue supporting us and make dua for us.
That's great. So how can they get involved here, Carl?
Well, you could go to irusa.org, and if you go to the at the top of the page, if you go to the where we work, a menu drops down of all the countries that we have projects in and all the countries that we work with. You can click on those countries, read those projects, and donate specifically to those countries.
What if they want to volunteer?
You'd go to irusa.org, and I just want to make sure I'm saying this right because I know where it is, but I want to make sure I got it right. You go to irusa.org, put your mouse on top of ways to help, and right in the center, top button, volunteer.
There you go. There you go.
Can I add one thing?
Absolutely.
Of course, sir. The floor is yours.
One of the major problems sometimes we have is people are always specific to donate to specific countries and projects, which is highly appreciated, and we know why they are doing it. But sometimes we need flexibility in terms of responding to other emergencies, and there's always a time lag between the time we respond and the time people donate. So I would like to ask our supporters, our donors, to actually help us by sometimes donating to our emergency fund, to our general fund, so that we have the flexibility to use the money wherever is most needed at any given time.
Fantastic.
Yeah, and to say I thought I just saw it here somewhere, but I guess I didn't. If you go to irusa.org and you click on Donate Now, one of the options is in there is humanitarian aid, and a lot of that, as you were saying, is just the general fund, so that can be used. So, let's say, God forbid, there's another earthquake in
somewhere.
Let's say Mexico. I don't know, yeah. And the IRR family decides to respond. We obviously have never worked in Mexico before, so we don't have a Mexico fund, but we could use the general donations to go help those in need in Mexico. God forbid there's an earthquake there.
Correct. That's what we need.
Right. So I think the other thing I would add, a question for you, sir, is that we have our regular downloads and our regular audience, and this content will be recycled at some point for others to view and listen to and enjoy. The floor is open. You have their attention. You have our audience. You are the CEO of Islamic Relief Worldwide. You are the CEO of IRW. The floor is yours. The mic is yours. What is most important on your heart right now to share with the whole audience?
I think, thank you very much for that. Honestly, something that has been really giving me sleepless nights is Yemen. Mm. Yemen 80% of the population need some sort of humanitarian aid. And yet, it does not make it in the headlines. It does not make it in the, any other major medias or your Facebook or your Twitter and so on, social media. I would like to urge our people, our supporters, our donors, to look at what is happening in Yemen, to support us, to give us generously to support these people. I think Yemen is one of the most affected countries that I feel currently is not getting the support it needs, the coverage it needs. So you can imagine when I say 80% of the people need some sort of humanitarian aid, it is a disaster. We need your help. We need your assistance. So please support us.
Well, thank you very much. Carl, do you have anything else?
I do not.
Well, thank you very much for taking time out this morning for you.
You're
and,
welcome.
And coming in today to talk to us today.
Yes. Thank you so much. From across the pond, the other side of the great white ocean.
All right, sir. I think that's good.
I have messed this up.
Thank you.
Again.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Yeah, I didn't know where you were going with all of that as well.
What are we doing?
Let's do it badly and then we can do it better.
Oh, excellent. That's the way I like to do
it. Dun, dun, dun. Spoiler alert.
Can we try that again? 1, 2, 3, together for a better world. More stories, less yap.
What?
Yup.
That was just, it was so real.